I've been out playing cricket this morning.
Oh, so you have? Doing mysterious things like nets.
Yes, like they do in the Archers.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Wow. It's part of my new life. It's not really living wild, though, is it?
No, and I've helped at the food bank. That's not living wild either, or dangerously.
No. The wildest thing we've done now, though, we've got a herb garden. What herbs are we growing?
It's in our backyard, which hasn't actually got any grass, but we are able to grow things in pots. And we've got mint, sage, rosemary, dill, coriander.
And now we've got, you've got a trellis yesterday.
I know, I'm so excited.
Yeah. A trellis with climbing plants on it.
Yeah, for the clematis, which is apparently called Duchess of Cornwall.
Is
and
it?
She's looking absolutely luxuriant against the trellis.
Oh, right.
With her tendrils all spread out instead of being stuck to sticks.
So you're saying the Duchess of Cornwall has tendrils spread out?
I'm not sure if we've got a Duchess of Cornwall anymore. She became the Queen, didn't she?
She's a Queen now, isn't she?
Yeah. And I think Kate was the Duchess of Cornwall, but she's the Princess of Wales now. You can't keep up, can you?
No. They confuse me. Anyway, it's not really living wild, but we've been talking to Leona Johnson.
Yes, who does, well, she doesn't, yeah, she's involved with Live Wild, which is fantastic. Yeah.
Yes, it's linked to the forest school and all kinds of foraging and all kinds of things.
Mm. Yeah.
So, I thought we stop talking and we just move on to Leona.
Let's do that. So, we're sitting in Leona's lovely house in Mytham Royd and wanting to chat about Live Wild. So, welcome, Leona. Well, I can't welcome you to your own house. But, you
know. Welcome to our show.
Our world. So, yeah, tell us a bit about Live Wild, how long it's been going and what your involvement is.
Mm, well, thank you for inviting me. I was part and one of the founding members of Live Wild about 9 years ago. We were a group of five women who were all forest school leaders, and we were all wanting to bring more nature connection to our lives and for our children. And we felt that joining together and creating a co-op and creating something in the valley where we live would be a good move, and that's how Live Wild was born.
Well, so in case people don't know, can you tell us what forest schools are?
So forest school is a movement of people who believe that children and all people actually should be spending and could be spending more time outdoors, connecting to nature, connecting to themselves in nature, and connecting to the cycles of life and in a playful and natural way.
Oh, well, lovely thing to be involved in. So from that, you set up Live Wild.
Mm-hmm.
And what does that involve?
So Live Wild, originally we started by running holiday clubs, and Live Wild still runs holiday clubs, Wildlings Holiday Club and a monthly nature club, which is where children can come month in, month out, all the way through the year and see and feel how things change through the seasons. And then they get to do some foraging, they get to cook on the fire, they get to do den building and exploring and swimming in the rivers. And it's a really brilliant program. One of the things that I'm most proud of, because I just love the effect that seeing those children who've been coming for a long time has what that's had for them. You know, they feel really at home in the woods, and they also feel really home with other children, because it's a safe space that's not school. And there isn't the pressures of school, and there isn't the pressures of fashion and all of the other things. It's just when you're in the woods, it's quite a leveler, and everybody's the same, and there's lots of ages who play together and explore together and make things together. So
What's the age range?
Live Wild works with children as young as five, and the holiday club is 5 to 12, and the monthly nature club is from age 5. There's two groups, from age 5 till around 10, and then from 10 to around 14. And so that older group a lot of them have been coming for quite a few years, and it's just been growing with them, which is brilliant, because there's not many safe spaces for teenagers to go and actually have that kind of different setting. And there's also a home education day that's every Tuesday, and that's for children between the ages of 8 and 14.
So for kids who are home educated, come on. Wow, it must be fantastic as well for the parents to see them getting away from screens and, you know, just the general pressures.
It also gets over that thing people often say about home education, which is they should be out there playing with the kids.
Yeah. That's the thing. I think, you know, we have very busy lives. I'm a parent myself, and it's quite easy to spend your time moving children from one building to the car to the school and back again, and we're always, you know, it's quite hard, as you say, to organize things that aren't around screen time and films and this phone culture now, and so creating an alternative and a place where people can really find a passion, that it's not just a holiday, it's not just a childcare facility, you know, it's just somewhere where they can actually really explore who they are and in a really fun and creative way. And for me, you know, that doesn't mean that people don't use screens when they go home and do research and find out about things, but actually it's a really fun way of finding out more about who we are, who they are. And what we had was all of these groups for children and then adults coming to us and saying, we wish you would do something like that for us. And then Live Wild started running programs for adults as well.
So you do.
Fantastic.
So adults do pretty much the same sort of things, do they?
Well, everything that we do is based on connection. You know, we really feel like connection to self, connection to each other, and connection to nature is what underpins everything we do. And so Live Wild runs foraging courses. It runs a program called Questing with Fire, which is a rite of passage program for adults who are interested in looking more deeply at themselves or their life, or maybe they're in a time of transition. So they may have ended a relationship or had a recent bereavement, or maybe they've just gone through the menopause and they want to honour that. So it's about transition and coming more into connection with who we are, because again, the busyness of life sometimes has us forget that, because we're just doing the next thing and working really hard, and maybe we're being a parent and then we forget who we are when we weren't a parent, you know. So it's a really amazing program that's been running for about 2.5 years now. And we do about 2 cycles every year. And the interesting thing about it is that all the people who've done the quest come back to be part of the quest for the adults, the next lot of questers. So they come back and witness and be part of the community and support them and honour that process that they're going through, having experienced it.
I'm really interested in this, because it was actually, we bumped into a woman called Rachel, didn't we, in a supermarket, who was interested in this, and she just got back from a fire quest, and it was her who said, you need to talk to the owner. So if I were to go to a fire quest, what actually happens?
Good question. Because it's not something that we do very much in our culture, is this kind of connecting to ourselves and taking time out and creating space to just consider who we are when we're not whatever label we attach ourselves to, you know, whether we're not being parent or we're not being the teacher, or we're not being
your children leaving home is a big one, because you've had 20 years or whatever being parents, and then you have to remember, do you go back to what you were before you were parents, or is it a new thing? And it's not a question. I mean, people talk about the empty nest syndrome, but it's not really something that's gone into very much.
No. And I even any transition, you know, we part of life is that we lose people. And so taking space and time isn't something that's very easy to do. But what we do on the quest is create that space and time. So people come together and we'll spend a number of days in the woods connecting to each other and sharing the magic of fire. You know, every culture throughout the world, throughout all of history, people have sat round fire to connect, whether that's to sing or whether that's to do ceremony or whether that's just to cook or be warm. You know, it's something that's universally understood, and it's something that I think draws and can draw everyone in. So when you can learn a little bit more about it, about the materials that are needed and different ways of making fire, and just create the space and time to sit with fire and experience yourself when you're around fire, and especially with other people who are all there for the same reason, it creates a really magical space. So that the process is a number of days of sort of preparation, and then there's a weekend where part of that weekend is where the person who's the quester, or the number of questers, they'll sit with the fire from sunset to sunrise and keep it going all night long, and then they'll come back to a communal fire that's been kept going throughout the night and welcomed, kind of welcomed home, as it were. You know, they've been out to do this thing that's quite hard to stay up all night and be alone in the dark, and you know, and face yourself in that setting. For many people it's just really nourishing and really supportive and inspiring, but for some it's a challenge, but to come back into a space where you're sort of welcomed back, and you know, often brings a lot of insight and a lot of deeper connection to who you want to be in the world when you actually choose it, and you're not just doing the next thing, but you're like, okay, now I've got time, or now that person's gone, or now I'm not being mum full time, what else could I do? And that's when people start getting inspiration and finding more clarity, and that's been the experience that we've had on this program, is that people are really deeply passionate about living well, you know, and contributing and wanting to give something back for their life. So I feel really proud of it. You might be able to tell. But yeah, and Rachel, you know, you met Rachel, and Rachel's one of the members of Live Wild. She's one of the lead facilitators of the Nature Mentoring Program, and so yeah, she's a fabulous facilitator herself.
I know, it's great, because when I work at lots of music, well, fewer these days, but I've used to work at lots of music festivals, and one of the highlights is to get away from the stages and sit around the fire with people you don't know. So I fully understand that. And I've always thought it's something that is so deep in us that we don't realise. I mean, you know, we're in a lovely street here. I'll bet every one of these has some kind of fireplace in the living room. I mean, you've got a gorgeous one here.
I do.
Yeah. I mean, technology's moved on. When we were kids, the day would start with our dads getting up and making a fire.
I remember doing that. My grand's. It was one of my favourite memories, rolling up the newspaper in a certain way, making the little knot and big, a big pile of it.
Yeah.
And it was freezing cold, and we'd be making the fire, getting ready for the day.
Yeah.
That was always my dad's job, you know, doing the fire.
Yeah.
And sweeping out the ashes, the grates, and then doing all that.
And, you know, they might have been replaced by, you know, electric and, well, gas, and then electric and fires and things, but it's still there in most houses, some form of fireplace, even if it's not a real fire.
When I did my forest school training, one of the parts of the training was that you're supposed to make 50 fires within the training period, 6 months or so. And although I'd spent a lot of time around fire, it had always been tended to be the men who'd lit the fire, and it was really strange for me to notice that, because I'm not in any way you know, I've always seen myself as active participant in everything, strong and independent, and it was a really great opportunity for me to actually start using tools and really take notice of my own normal usual behaviors, and then how I and then learn how to make fires. And I've taught hundreds of children how to make fire now, and even though I've done that so often, I still feel a little bit nervous each time I'm going to light a fire, because it's a powerful element, you know. It has this real, it's the element of transformation, you know, and it can create this you know, huge masses of solid mass into gas, and it can hurt, and and sometimes it doesn't do what you want it to do, and so it brings that element of unpredictability, and you know, it's just a great thing to be around to teach you about life.
That's right. It's a creative thing, isn't it?
And you just said there in passing when you were doing your forest school training. Mm-hmm. I mean, what's that? Can people just go and train to start a forest school?
Yeah, so when I did my training, it was over 10 years ago, and I'd been hearing about it for a little while. It was one of those things that when I heard it, I was like, what is that? Like, that sounds amazing. I was a social worker before that, and you know, all of my work has been about working with people. How can we create more nature-connected culture, or a more connected culture? Because I saw disconnection, what is now been coined disconnection sickness everywhere. Mm. And
as a social worker, you would see it more than most.
Exactly, I saw that a lot. And and I really felt, well, I want to be part of the solution. I want to be part of creating the culture that I want to see, rather than always firefighting the culture, the broken culture that, you know, where people are suffering, if I can. And so I learned, I've trained as an ecotherapist. I've also trained as a forest school leader. And the forest school was just so brilliant, because it was about following your own, creating space to allow children to follow their own intuition, to play. What would they do if they were given the space and empty containers and water and mud and the freedom and the conditions have been set well to create the optimum conditions for connection for them to just explore and play? And what I see often is that when we did it in schools was that children who would come, some would be so afraid to take off their shoes and socks on the grass. You know, even on a normal grassy school field, it would be like the most disgusting thing ever to take the shoes and socks off. But by the end of working with us for a number of weeks, then they forget all that, and they become more liberated, more free, more passionate, more excitable, and able to play. And that you could, you know, I use the example of walking barefoot, but that goes for all sorts of things: getting muddy, climbing trees, being able to interact with scary things and tools and fire. It's such a brilliant way of building confidence and self-awareness. And the forest school movement has grown so much in the past 20 years that now almost every school will have had some forest school. It feels exciting to have seen that as a movement grow and become more mainstream, although it definitely isn't still done enough, in my opinion.
That's a fair comment.
So if people are interested in joining or starting up themselves, what can they do?
Well, there's the Forest School Association website, which has a database of places where people can find forest school leaders or can look at training that there is. But if people are interested in just deepening their own experience of being in nature, then Live Wild has a lot of training for both children and adults. And that's the website's www.livewild.org.uk, and we are a Calderdale based organization. But we have also worked in Manchester and Leeds and around the north. I used to be a director of Live Wild, but now I resigned as director, but I'm a project leader. But it's got a absolutely brilliant, fantastic team of multi-passionate humans facilitating all different ways of trying to bring people together to create a more connected culture. I really feel so proud of having been part of Live Wild for for the last 9 years.
And but I can tell by your enthusiasm that, you know, you may not be a director anymore, but you're not walking away from it.
No, because for me it's about, you know, doing what I can in the place where I live.
Mm.
I also run online courses, and I also, you know, work in running retreats and programs around something called cultural emergence, and that's one of the programs I run is called Peace, Empowerment and Cultural Emergence, and that's down south with an amazing woman for people who are interested in permaculture.
Mm-hmm.
I work with Luby McNamara, who wrote the book People and Permaculture.
Oh.
And we came together because, again, her passion and my passion are the same, which is how do we create a more connected culture, and what are the conditions that create the optimum, you know, possibility of that. And that's what we try and bring into the courses and events that we run through Applewood Permaculture Centre.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think we're in a really interesting time in the world. I think a lot of people understand that many of the ways that have been the norm aren't actually working very well, and that there is a possibility to be more creative and more empowered in how we choose to live. And that's obviously not available for everyone, because the world has a lot of war and
and economically as well, not everyone can choose how they want to live.
No, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
But I do think that when those who can do, we can create ripples of connection that filter through. And also there are lots of ways that, like getting things into mainstream schools and like getting funding to do programs that make things more accessible, you know, we can start to normalize a culture of, yeah, safety and connection and
interconnectedness, isn't it? Basically,
yeah.
I mean, I find it fascinating. I used to teach sociology, and I've always been what was described often as a loony lefty. a label I wear proudly, I have to say. But there's always an undercurrent or a sort of alternative and or counterculture. It's always there,
mm-hmm.
in sort of every sort of walk of life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the powers that be might want us all to be not connected,
mm-hmm.
but there's an inherent desire in people to connect,
mm-hmm.
with each other, mm-hmm. I always think.
Yeah, and, you know, just on a practical level, we don't have the best climate here, being outdoors all the time, do we? How do you get around that?
Yeah, well, you know, what's the saying? You know, there's never bad weather, it's just bad clothing.
Right, okay, yeah.
Saying, yeah. You know, I think sometimes it's so very easy to stay inside the centrally heated house.
Mm.
And as we said before, you know, move from house to car to, mm-hmm. to work and back again,
yeah.
and miss completely sometimes the turning of the seasons and the, you know, the change of the trees. So, you know, what I've learned is that having a commitment to connection and having a commitment to being out in nature has really supported me in all other areas of my life.
Mm.
You know, there's a big movement around mindfulness and well-being, and those things are really important. But just taking a walk in nature can have all of those physiological, biological, emotional effects that doing meditation can have. If you just take the time and the space, and it doesn't have to be very long, simply taking 15 minutes to sit still in nature can actually, you know, fundamentally change the way your nervous system is for the rest of the day. And when we've ingrained that as a practice, a way of being, almost like, you know, as common as brushing your teeth, if we did that with children, if we helped them to see and feel that it was really important to have some outside time every day and get that light and that vitamin D and the way it, you know, works on your brain, then I think we would have a different culture, even when it's raining. And, and trust me, I am just as much as anyone else. So so sad about this rain that's not ever stopped.
I know.
But when, do you know, whenever you've been to a holiday club day or a day out in the woodland school or foraging or whatever the day is, and you get to the end of it, if it's been a real wet day, you know, it's a hard day to start teaching on that day, but by the end of the day you just feel like you've survived. And you get to the end of it and it's like, wow, it wasn't that bad after all.
Yeah.
And in some ways it's something everybody knows in themselves, because as soon as the sun comes out, the parks fill up, the beaches fill up.
Yeah, yeah.
All you're doing is saying, well, you can go out in the rain
as
well.
You can go out in the rain. And, you know, a good shelter helps. That's part of, that is the Live Wild dream, I must say. If anybody who listens to this actually has land and is willing and wanting for courses and events for children and adults to be on their land, we would love to have a shelter, a space where we can have a fire with a permanent shelter and have the opportunity to, you know, have people move about on the land freely with, you know, it, within woods, even camping, you know, why not? Yeah. We'll dream big. Yeah. But, yeah, that, you know, having more opportunity, making those opportunities more accessible for people, because it isn't for everyone to be out all day in the soaking wet. But, you know, the way we usually do it is with using tarpaulins and we do very well. But actually, you know, in lots of cultures, they have outdoor open-sided shelters, you know, so that people can be out and have time together. And
So anyone listening who can help with that, what should they do? If say, I've got a load of land, I want to have it.
Well, info@livewild.org.uk.
Okay. And on that note, with a plea to the public, we'll say thank you. And thanks, Leona. It's been really interesting talking to you.
Thank you. And if anybody's interested in working with me, my website is www.leonajohnson.life.
Okay. Leona, L-E-O-N-A. Yeah, Leona Johnson.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
That's good. That's good.
Oh, it really was, yeah.
Yeah, that's all right. Oh, so Leona, really interesting woman.
I know, fascinating stuff. Lovely. Yeah, and inspiring.
Yes. It's one of those ones that just, it's so interesting. It just raises more questions, doesn't it?
Yeah, like, for instance, permaculture, which was mentioned, which I vaguely know what it is, but we need to know more.
We'll go and find somebody in the valley who does permaculture.
Yeah, good plan.
Okay.